Okay, let's see where we are with that. Okay, the preliminary procedural matters. And before we do that, I want everyone to know that I did have a brief discussion with Mr. Payne. He's not feeling well. And then Mr. Martin also had approached me on his behalf. Mr. Payne is not feeling well. I told him he ought to go home, get rest, try to feel better, and that we would, you know, call him tomorrow. What I propose to do as we go through the individual cease and desist orders is that if somebody is not here, I'm not going to immediately assume that they have failed to show up for the hearing. They'll go to the bottom of the list, and then once we get to that point where everyone has appeared and testified and we've resolved those cases where people have been present, I'll then go through that portion of the list where people have not shown up in order, and they'll have another opportunity at that point. I did tell Mr. Payne that we would give him a call on his phone and tell him when we think we're getting close to when he should come back here. So, procedural matters. Okay, the document. Let's start with, we had, folks, we're going to go through the objections and responses to the documents that have been proposed for submission by the prosecution team and the Community Services District. And I know that we had received Mr. Sato's reply to Mr. Murphy's changes to the document list after the chair had made a ruling. This is the okay. What's being handed out then, it's dated December 12th. It's Mr. Murphy's and the CSD's revised document submittal. And I think, Mr. Sato, is this the one that you've already provided us with your reply to?
Well, yes.
With further objections?
We had further objections dated September 13th, okay. 2006.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Murphy. Have you had a chance to review Mr. Sato?
Okay. I have. I'd like to address first Mr. Sato's objections to documents 632, 641, 705, and 784 through 847. Those documents we submitted because, and we believe, that they are directly relevant to the proposed order, specifically in that, and we'll make this argument obviously at length later, that the 1108 date may not be a feasible or reasonable date, cutoff date for the county's adoption of an assessment. We believe that these documents show that the county has a number of issues to consider prior to even beginning its Prop 218 vote on the assessment, specifically with regards to engineering options. So to that extent, we believe that those documents are relevant to that portion of the CDO.
And that's 632, 641, 705, and 784 to 847.
Yes.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Would you state your name for the record?
I apologize. My name is Greg Murphy of Burke, Williams, and Sorensen for the Community Services District.
Thank you.
Working backwards again, Mr. Chairman, documents 504 and 509, both of which are pleadings in lawsuits that have occurred previously in Los Osos, also show challenges that the county might face in meeting the 1108 date. It would be, and again, we'll deal with this more later, but it would be unfortunate to see that date not met by the county due to some sort of legal challenge that stops the County Board of Supervisors from approving an assessment that was otherwise adopted or agreed to by the voters. And again, our purpose in doing this is to show that the 1108 hard date for what I like to call Mr. Sato's safe harbor or more lenient provision may not be the appropriate cutoff date.
Now, these are pleadings in what lawsuit?
These are two lawsuits that were filed, one, I believe, in 1997 and one, I believe, in 2004, although I might be wrong on the dates, both of which dealt with previous prop. I apologize. At least the 2004 lawsuit dealt with a previous Prop 218 vote undertaken in the Los Osos community.
And what part of the pleadings?
They are the
these document numbers contemplate.
They are the petitions for writ.
Okay.
Both of them.
Yeah, the only is that a verified petition?
I don't have it in front of me. I apologize.
Yeah.
According to your table, document number 509 is listed as a verified petition. Document 504 does not indicate that it's a verified petition.
Right. I believe document 504 to be verified, but not having it in front of me, sir, I do not know.
Okay. You know, my sense would be pleadings are allegations, you know, of facts that have not been resolved. And so, I mean, if they were verified, that would be would you know lend more weight to their credibility than just allegations in a lawsuit. And so that's why I have trouble really trying to pin down the reliability of that evidence.
I understand, Mr. Chairman. I don't submit them for the facts contained therein, or more to the point, as you said, the allegations contained therein. I submit them for what they represent, which is the potential for some disaffected person to bring a lawsuit that would derail the county's ability to adopt the assessment by 1108. The facts therein are not relevant except to show that in the past, Prop 218 votes have been challenged in the district or in the Los Osos community. They're more relevant to show that the county could well not hit the target date in Mr. Sato's CDO due to matters outside their control or indeed the control of the CDO recipients.
Okay. Yes.
Can't we just take notice that any action by any entity can be petitioned or filed against, and we understand that? That's not an unusual occurrence in our society. Anyone can file on just about anything. So I'm not sure what the point of this is.
Yeah, and it's moreover, it's a kind of an infinite regress, isn't it? I mean, you could say, well, if the date were 2009, why not say that it could be derailed because during 2007 and 2008 there were multiple lawsuits? At some point, what the board is frustrated with is multiple reasons can do exist for delaying the start of a treatment plant. I think we know that. So.
Okay. I understand. Thank you.
Okay. And the other ones in
with,
that?
With regard to the others,
beginning with one.
Beginning with one and running through 16, they provide background regarding the Community Services District finances. To the extent that we've been given a greater opportunity to speak, I won't speak in the next segment on behalf of the local government, and rather I'll tuck this in later. But to some extent, the imposition of CDOs can have a negative impact on the CSD's overall financial situation as it moves forward, and these documents are presented to show the current financial situation and to support the discussion we'll have later regarding the potential financial impacts.
Yeah. Okay. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
And what the relevancy of that is to these cease and desist orders?
Mr. Shellcross, I'll address that at length later, but in sum, to the extent that individuals would, because of the CDOs, be encouraged to or feel any need to implement an alternative system on their own property, then as this region moves forward and the county adopts the community-wide wastewater treatment system, those people who have alternative systems on site would feel no compulsion to hook up to the community-wide sewer system. That would require either that the district raise the fees on those people who do hook up, or in the alternative, find other ways to manage that cost.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and then deal with those documents right now. What I would propose, and then you know, the board can tell me if you agree with me, I would tend to allow in. I mean, we'll give them some leeway here with the documents. They're going to have to argue anyway what relevancy they have and, you know, where their strengths lie in trying to persuade us. The documents beginning with 504 and concluding at 847, I would allow in. And hopefully Mr. Murphy's going to tell us why they're important, why they're relevant. Okay. The others, though, beginning with 1 and ending in 16, I would say would not come in, because the CSD finances are really not at issue at this point in time with these proceedings. So any comments or concerns by the rest of the board?
No, as long as we're going to hear why they're relevant.
Well, I'm giving him that leeway.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
Mr. Richards, anything else we need to do about those?
No, that covers
okay.
That particular.
So that we're clear. 632, 641, 705, 784 through 847 can come in. 504 and 509 can come in. But 1, 3, 5, 6, 8, 10, 11, 13, 15, and 16 will not come in due to lack of relevancy to these proceedings. Okay.
Mr. Young, may I speak to this issue before you actually find the rule?
Okay.
You know, it seems to me that, you know, this is this question of relevancy, and I would like to have the ability to argue against their relevancy
okay.
at the time that they are trying to be introduced or actually utilized or
okay.
referenced by Mr. Murphy.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
We'll allow that, certainly. And certainly what we have read at this point is not the actual documents, but just the descriptions that have been provided. So, you know, we haven't really learned, you know, what's in them. What is the next group, then, that we need to deal with of documents?
Well, there's no objection.
There's no objection, then?
Are there other objections?
Yes, we have an objection to something that has been submitted by, I'll call them the designated party group, called Exhibit B.
Okay. Good. So now we're done with the CSD's exhibits.
Correct.
Okay. We'll go to the other exhibit list. Ms. McPherson, do you know something about this list? This list is Exhibit B, Designated Parties Master List, submitted 11/15/2006. Okay. All right, go ahead, Mr. Sato.
Let me just state my objection. We're not certain as to whether any of the documents that have been attached or referenced on Exhibit B have actually been submitted into the record by any of the designated parties. We see that they're being referenced, but we don't know, and we couldn't tell from looking at our files whether or not we had actually seen these documents previously. I don't know whether this was an attempt by the people who attached Exhibit B to their submissions, because they didn't explain what Exhibit B was in any of their submissions, as near as I could tell.
Did they attach this to their submissions? I think some of them did.
Yes. It was
the actual list, but they just refer to the list.
They didn't even refer to the list. It was just part of their submission. Now, we didn't hear an explanation as to what these documents were for, how they intended to use them, whether they were going to try to introduce these things at this hearing or present them otherwise. I mean, I guess we're somewhat in the dark as to what the status of the actual documents are.
Okay. Well, then why don't we invite any of the designated parties that are going to rely or have submitted this Exhibit B list. And I know Ms. McPherson is representing some of them. If there's anyone else in the audience that does want to address why these this exhibit list should be admitted, would you please come up so we can figure out what's going on? Why don't you start, Ms. McPherson?
Okay. The list
speak up into the mic so we can
the list of thank you. Gail McPherson. The Exhibit B list is...
Ms. McPherson, just as a matter of protocol, when you start speaking, please state your name and who you are representing.
Yeah. Oh, Gail McPherson, Lori McCombs.
Okay.
The designated party master list was submitted on the 15th. It was delivered in disk form, electronic form, by Alan Martin and witnessed also by Bill Moylan. They have a stamped verification of that delivery of the electronic files. The master list was emailed by, I emailed it, but also Ryan Galassa and one other designated party, which I'm not sure who that was. I think it was Rob Scheip, also confirmed that it was from them so that it would be accepted as from a designated party. The box that was pretty much scanned and put into form here was things were documents that they thought they might need to use, and that would be many designated parties, not just one. And because the board had encouraged them to try to work together and consolidate some of their arguments, they truly tried to do this. They were very much in the dark on what would be allowed, and the you know the procedures and protocol and things like that. And so they weren't really sure what they were going to use until, well, actually, some of them just now received, yesterday in the mail, received the list of the disallowed documents. And so they haven't had a chance to even look at this or Exhibit A and to ascertain whether or not they have documents that they're going to use. Many of them said last night that they were going to just say, well, I won't introduce any documents because... I have no clue at this point what would be allowed and what's not allowed. So, you know,
this is a comprehensive list. Do these documents also appear in the CSD's list?
You know, some of them may be duplicates. It was hard to tell what was what. And I believe these for the most part, are not duplicates. I know that they wanted to show progress in the, you know, progress and changed conditions, and so they have a lot of documents that go to reasonable progress in a wastewater project, which is the basis for the CDOs. You know, we didn't have a project. So they have some of the documents that go to that argument. They have
But who has these documents? See,
the water board has these documents in electronic format on a CD or a DVD.
This is what we're having a little bit of trouble understanding as the advisors to the board. The designated parties were required to submit the documents that they wanted to rely upon.
Right.
On the 15th of November.
Right.
They were allowed also to incorporate by reference so that they wouldn't have to submit copies of documents that were already in the files of the regional board. They were allowed to incorporate by reference documents in the files of the regional board or documents that had been submitted by the CSD or documents that had been submitted by other designated parties.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we need to understand is In looking at this list, is this a list of documents that are supposed to be existing already in the files of the regional board that the that various designated parties want to rely upon, or is this a master list of all the documents that all the designated parties have submitted? Which is it?
It's the second statement.
So this is supposed to be a comprehensive list of all the documents that the designated parties have submitted on November 11th.
Correct. It was that,
November,
yeah, 15th.
Rather than, and it's not an attempt to incorporate into those submissions documents that exist in the files of the regional board, or is it?
If some of these documents exist in the regional board's files, then yes, but they'd be duplicated in this submission.
This includes incorporations by reference and documents that were actually physically submitted.
All of these documents were physically submitted that are on this list.
Okay, well, I think we need to also start with that point, because the board hasn't seen the DVD or the CD. Mr. Sato, has the prosecution team received?
Can't hear you.
We don't believe that we received these documents.
Okay.
In the first letter I believe in the first letter there was a reference to some documents that they didn't have a master sheet for, called Exhibit B, and they were discs, CDs, and they referenced that. So I think they do have them. I don't think they had the master list from the email that they attached, you know, that they connected with that to go through that list. We do have a stamped delivery on time of the documents themselves electronically as they requested.
Of these documents that you have listed here, or a list of the documents?
No, this is the list that came by email. We have a DVD that was dropped off on the 15th.
And that DVD included all the documents that are on this list?
Yes.
Not just a list, but the documents themselves.
No, all the documents. The documents themselves.
I'm sorry. You know, the prosecution team does have some, it looks like CDs, that we couldn't identify what they were, what documents they are. We believe that they had come to us from the Community Services District. And in looking at the designations on there, they don't seem to be at all associated with documents on Exhibit B. So we're somewhat at a... And we certainly don't have anything that looks like a DVD in our possession.
Okay. Ms. McPherson, do you know how many? Was there one DVD? Was there one CD?
There was one marked exhibit. There was one marked.
Scanned individually. Mm-hmm. There's a PDF file with an identifying notation on it so that somebody can quickly pull it up.
Yes. In fact,
here it is. It's 852.
In fact, it was less messy than the CSD's, documents. They all were numbered. It was done by a professional PDF. It was PDF.
Okay. Do you have a copy of it?
I can get a copy of it here.
Does any other designated party have a copy of this DVD or CD that you're going to rely upon? Okay. Well, the problem we have is that if the prosecution team, for whatever reason, doesn't have it in front of them, that right now they can't comment except to object to anything that they haven't seen. And I want to give you an opportunity to at least get the documents in front of them to review. Now, some of these I might have, questions about their relevancy on my own, but I would rather the prosecution team worry about that.
We
could just kind of decide what's going to come in and what isn't.
I can get them another copy of that. But I did want to make a point that the reason the numbering seems to go from, connect with the CSD's numbering is because initially the designated parties worked with the CSD to put together the original list. And we wanted, and the intent was, is to keep all of the documents together in one place so that we could then kind of go to the well, get a document if we needed it for a particular designated party, and that it would be easier for everyone. It was the intent for Exhibit B to be introduced with the CSD, but there was a disconnect, and so the designated parties themselves submitted that and then referenced that as something they might be using in their hearings.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
She could do that. Yeah, I'd rather do that at that point. Or it won't happen at that time. Which is pretty accurate. You know, what I'd like to do then would be to have Ms. McPherson obtain a copy of the CD, DVD, whatever it is, submit it to you, and have you take a look at it. I know we're going to go through the CSD's presentation first before we get to that separate list. We have your presentation, and so we'll be some time in the afternoon before that becomes an issue. I don't know. We may have to take a quick break to have part of your staff maybe go through that list, or not take the break and have someone split off to do that.
Well, I think
so. I don't know how else. I mean, Ms. McPherson says that she submitted it to the board, I mean, to the prosecution team, so I'm willing to accept that, that it has taken place, and maybe we have it here, and maybe it's just not labeled. So, any suggestions on how we proceed with this?
Well, I think one of the other ways we could deal with it is that rather than having to review every single document on the DVD that might be provided to us in advance of whatever testimony might be provided, that we can wait to see whether or not any of the designated parties actually incorporate or try to refer to any one of these documents. And at the time that they try to, then we can determine the relevancy or address any evidentiary objections that I might have at that time.
Okay.
That will allow us to move, I think, more quickly.
That sounds good.
Okay. Well, but we're still going to need to see what the document is.
But they have to produce it if they're going to
produce
it.
Right. So.
Yeah. Well, I do have a couple of DVDs here, and I want to look at them and see if that's it. If it is, then I can give this to them.
Okay, go ahead.
But okay.
Okay. What other procedural? Folks, while we're waiting for Ms. McPherson to look through her DVDs or CDs, next on our list is going to be to take up, as part of these preliminary procedural matters, if there's any other objections that the board needs to consider at this point before we start with the item number 3, the non-evidentiary comment by government agencies. So that would be next in line. So this would be for any other designated parties that have some procedural objections or evidentiary concerns that they want the board to consider. Now would be the time to do that once Ms. McPherson has told us what she has.
My name is Tim Rockney, and I'm 1015. And I object to not having received the documents that were sent out in rebuttal to the documents submitted by the CSD. Got home last night after my daughter's soccer game. There was some information there. Not helpful. It should be given in a more timely manner.
Okay. Are you referring to Mr. Sato's rebuttal?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a copy now?
It's at home, yeah.
Okay. Do you need one for today?
No.
Okay.
I also want to do a reality check. Am I hearing that we have evidence that we submitted, or Gail, the CSD, submitted a document, a CD or a DVD, and it's not being found by the prosecution team, and therefore they can object to that? I mean, if they have done sloppy staff work, then that needs to be recognized. And if that's what I'm hearing, then I object to that kind of...
It's not clear where the sloppiness lies at this point.
I heard that it was received by this by the prosecution team. Did I not? Or just clarify that for me.
That was a statement.
I did not hear that they had received it. They've got some DVDs that they couldn't identify the contents related to the exhibit list.
Well, they were submitted in a timely manner.
Ms. McPherson said she had submitted it, and I'm willing to accept that statement that she had submitted it. And I'm going to give those parties that want those exhibits some time to make sure that the prosecution team can go through them and decide if they object to any.
But if they, if we're assuming that they got it in a timely way, why are they now saying that if they didn't know it was labeled, they don't know what's in it?
Well, I can't answer for them.
Well, can we ask them to answer, or how does this work?
That's a different issue as to how they receive documents and review them.
Okay.
And I don't think that's important. What's important for us is to see where they are, see if there's objections, and see how they may or may not come in to the hearing. That's all I'm really concerned about. Mr. Dugan.
Dave Dugan, representing Cynthia Coleman.
Yes.
This is questions about procedure, correct?
Yes.
My objections. I do have a few problems, but I'd like to ask that, did I hear Reed Sato indicate to you that he had advised this board earlier, has advised this board in how to proceed in this prosecution?
Who said that? I didn't catch the name.
Mr. Sato? I thought I heard that he said he had been advising this board on how to proceed.
You know, I didn't hear that. I've met him myself is this morning.
Okay.
And so we have had no contacts with the people sitting in Mr. Sato's table.
Okay.
The only one advising us, Mr. Dugan, is Mr. Richards.
Okay.
And
Mr.
Thomas.
That is my question, whether or not I did hear him say that. And so I will be reviewing the tape, but we are aware that his position is not to be an advisor to this board. That's correct.
Mr. Sato, do you want to clarify anything that may have been heard?
I actually don't know what you would have said. I don't advise the board. I've never advised the board. I said in the very beginning that I was looking forward to speaking to them in a public meeting about some initiatives that my office was going to undertake, but that's not advising this board.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
It's entirely possible that Mr. Sato may have used the term, I advised the board, in the context of I notified the board. Because that is terminology that is often used interchangeably. But Mr. Sato has not been advising the board with respect to the legal issues presented in this matter.
Okay, thank you.
And not with any other matter that this board may be involved with. With any other item that we deal with, he has not been involved in anything.
Yeah. And I thank you for your clarification.
Okay, you're welcome.
But I think we had this discussion a while back, a few months or so. So,
right.
Thank you.
Okay. How are we doing, Ms. McPherson?
Got them.
You got them?
Yep.
Okay. Is it on a CD, a DVD?
Yeah.
And it does say Exhibit B on it. Okay.
November 13th.
Do you have a duplicate or just one copy?
I can get a duplicate.
Okay.
I have to look at another option.
How should we do this? Mr. Sato, do you want, she can give you the copy that she's got, and at some point you guys could take a look at it, or we can then just rely upon the individual CDO recipients to try to get whatever documents they want before us identified at that time. Would you like to do it that way?
You know, now Mr. Thompson has advised me that he believes that he thinks that we have the document. So, I think we'll look at this, the documents that we have right now. I think that it's still, I can certainly make an objection now to the documents based upon the use of Exhibit B. I'd prefer to wait until to see whether the documents are actually used, because I think this is an example of one of those kitchen sink kinds of efforts to introduce documents in the administrative record. I think it's more useful to wait until we see whether any of the documents might actually be utilized before we start talking about whether they're relevant or should be submitted into evidence.
Why don't we do that?
I think that the some of the designated parties have said that they're going to incorporate them all in their testimony. So maybe in order just to save time and to move ahead, maybe there should be a break in the proceedings for the prosecution team to look as quickly as possible, but to flip through them and see if they really want to pull some out, because I think we're going to just be there again when we get to the individual parties. It sounds like it. Am I right?
Well, Mr. McPherson, how many are there on here? 50, 60 or something?
No. It starts at number 141 to 250, a couple hundred.
A couple hundred, okay. Well, I think when we I want to move through this, and maybe we will then just take a break in the proceedings so we can then deal with that issue before the individual CDO hearings begin. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Is that fine? All right. Any other designated party have any objections or issues procedurally or evidentiary-wise that they would like to raise with the board at this time? Yes, sir. 1029. Come on up.
One moment.
Chair,
yes.
Number 1029. My first question would be, we've decided to accept the settlement at the prior break.
Okay.
And so my question is, am I still allowed to present a not a CDO defense, but a some points as to process and procedural
repeat
issues?
Repeat the last part.
Am I still allowed to raise some questions I had as to procedure?
Well, I would say as an interested person, you could then speak, because we will take your CDO slot out of the process. But if you want to speak as an interested person, which is going to come up next, you'd have a minute to do so.
I'll wait for that
but
minute.
But then you have heard the discussion before about the settlement agreement and the proposed changes to it.
Yes, sir.
With the reporting form, and that's acceptable to you.
Yes.
And you do agree to sign that agreement?
Yes.
Okay. Well, okay, let's remove that. Yes?
I would point out that if any person who settles would be waiving their opportunity to challenge the issuance of the, of the order approving the settlement. I mean, if a person settles, they have no ability to challenge the provisions of the settlement agreement by appealing to the state board or petitioning a court for review later.
Let me clarify, if I may.
Okay.
My question here was if I would be allowed perhaps the 1 minute just to comment on some of the procedural issues we've had, and also with regards to the settlement, perhaps at closing public comments, I would still like to make some comments on the agreement we're going to sign, if that's
well, you're going to have an opportunity in our next session.
I understand that.
Okay.
And so right now I need to wait for the 1 minute.
You need to wait for that
parties.
So we can try to take care of things orderly, not get sidetracked.
Thank you.
So we'll take 1029 then off.
Okay. Yes,
Mr.
that's
Sato?
Correct.
No.
I notified
okay,
staff.
Yeah. All right. You have noted that? All right.
Are you going to do this?
Okay. Does anyone else wish to address the board, Ms. McPherson?
I will give it to Greg Murphy. We had some objections to not being able to question and depose testimony from Roger Briggs, and we had other issues with notice and the number of designated parties that did not receive notice timely. And I brought up one example where just yesterday they received something that was postmarked as of the 12th, and the 12th was the deadline for them to respond to the document.
Excuse me a second. I thought you were only speaking for one designated party.
Well, I am speaking for that designated party, but I'm bringing up the fact that there were others that also...
I understand that. but I'm assuming her objection only goes to her, the person she's representing.
Yes.
So if something happens to someone else, then they need to bring that up.
Yeah, at this proceeding, okay, you are here only for the people you are representing. You cannot speak
sure
for other parties
so
at all.
I understand that. Thank you.
So when I would
speak on something that would be something that someone else would be also in agreement with, then they should stand at the podium and make that same argument.
No, they will have an opportunity during the course of their hearing to make whatever arguments they want to make.
I'm talking about the objections.
You are here only to represent the people who have provided you with their power of attorney to represent them.
Okay,
and you have no authority from others to speak for them.
Okay. So, in behalf of the person that I'm representing, she did not get a chance to depose Roger Briggs, and that is something that I had brought up, and I'll bring that up again. The same thing with notices. She had several times that she documented that she did not receive notices. She brought her notice yesterday that she just received. None of the large documents from the 21st of November were mailed out until this week. The documents from December 1st were not mailed out until this week. And so she did not have a chance to properly prepare for her hearing. And she wanted to raise that concern and objection. And then, of course, there is the Water Board's use of email instead of the mail, and there was a lot of inconsistencies there for her as well. So I'm just bringing that up. And I understand that I'm only speaking for myself, and if others had that same problem, that would be their...
It's their burden to come up and share it with us.
Yeah.
Now, and you're representing who again? Excuse me.
Lori McCombs.
Does she get email? Does she have email access?
Only at work. Only at work. And what it was set up in the beginning where they wrote down their she wrote down her email address, but that did not necessarily mean that she expected service that way. It was just, you know, you write down your phone number and the form, and you write down your email. It didn't necessarily indicate that she wanted to get service by email or electronically.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, the issue of Mr. Briggs' deposition, did she specifically want to take his deposition?
Yes, there were a number of people who did, and she was one of them. And unfortunately, the request was for brought about in September, and there was some discussion about it with others, and there was not a notification to the other designated parties that this was taking place. And so on the 27th of September, there was a request by a few parties, and they added "and others" to it, and she thought she was part of that, and many others too, I suppose. But when it did finally take place, there was no notification, and there was no real coordination to get that testimony. And so she's requesting that she have that opportunity to depose and have Mr. Briggs present at the hearing.
His transcript is posted on the website. Is she aware of that?
The transcript was done by an amateur. There was not an attorney representing those people who took that deposition. The questions in the documents that she wanted to question him about were not part of that, and it was very limited.
The transcript that I reviewed was done by a certified court reporter.
A court reporter, but there was not an attorney that was representing.
Well, but see, people, you don't have to have an attorney represent
you. Of course not.
You. That's everyone's choice in this matter, to be represented or not be represented.
Well, she wasn't notified that that was taking place, and she was not able to be there to ask the questions or have those questions asked. Those were very limited, and they were in the interest of one person's hearing. It was...
Well, there was more than one person asking questions. I think Mr. Scheif asked a number of questions.
I believe there were two people.
I think even Mr. Moylan asked questions, and there might have been I think Mr. Payne was there also, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't ask any questions.
No.
Okay.
No, the people officially there.
I've read the transcript, and I'm aware of how the judge ruled yesterday on this issue in Superior Court. Is there really anything that Mr. Briggs could bring to bear on the issues that we've identified in this case that only he can provide?
I believe that there is.
And what are they? If you were to give me an offer of proof of what you think only he could bring to bear on this.
There are several letters that he wrote where he indicated that only new discharges were prohibited and that the intent was to keep people from building in the moratorium zone. And there is a letter that states that, and it's very confusing because it was written in 2002. And so that's one document that we would want to ask him about. We would want to ask him about several others where it seems to be the indication that the prohibition zone was set up to prohibit future discharges and not to come after individuals now without an opportunity to challenge.
The prohibition zone and its validity or non-validity, if you want to describe it that way, is not an issue we're dealing with. I mean, I tried to go through that early on in this proceeding this morning so that you would know. Some people may feel there are issues that are important to them, and the board's not going to entertain testimony or discussion on those things. That's one of them. Now, you can discuss this with the State Water Board or Superior Court if you think that we're making a mistake, but it's not relevant to what we're doing. As far as letters that may have been signed by Mr. Briggs, just because the head of an agency signs a letter does not mean that is the only individual that has knowledge or information about what went into putting the letter together. No, I don't know that just because he signed a letter back in 2002 that you have to take his deposition over.
But was
the judge yesterday?
The opportunity to take the deposition is what we're challenging. There should have been an opportunity to take that deposition, and the case wasn't refiled until September 8th. And we came about the 19th of September with a request, and then we followed that through. And there wasn't the coordination or the communication from the board or from the board staff that this was going to happen. And so the only people who were notified were the ones that happened to have a conversation or a relationship with Matt Thompson or the prosecution and or Michael Thomas, I think it was, and get this thing set up. The rest of them were completely left out in the cold. And for 45 people to end up with not even knowing that this was available to them is what the problem is.
Unfortunately, if you don't have a lawyer helping you, some of these things may not become apparent. I mean, the board itself is not responsible for setting up Mr. Briggs' deposition. That's not our doing. Okay. There were notices that were sent out and discussions made by Mr. Briggs that he was going to be taking a sabbatical. Somehow Mr. Scheidt was aware that this was taking place. Any of the 45 designated parties, including the CSD, could have noticed his deposition at any time that they wanted to. But you're saying that each party was supposed to sit back and someone was going to kind of feed them the information that this was taking place. You know what? In a Superior Court proceeding, that would happen, or an administrative proceeding.
But these people have been assured that
they could have noticed the deposition on their own. They could have been proactive and not reactive.
They were proactive. They did send out an email. They did not have it responded to. It was responded to Rob Scheip, and then that did not go out to the rest of the people.
Okay. Well, your objections noted about Mr. Briggs, so, and his deposition, and yes? Okay. Do you want to respond, Mr. Sant? We're going to go through each of her objections. If you want to respond just to the Roger Briggs component of this, please
It's clear on the record that there was a long period of time in which anybody who was interested in taking Mr. Briggs' deposition could have. and for whatever reason, people did not. There was a belated attempt by some people to notice the depositions. We moved to quash that notice. It was granted by the chair and this board, and I believe upheld now by the Superior Court. So, and maybe not. I haven't been at the proceedings, but it looks like, you know, we went through this process. The opportunity to take the deposition has come and gone. Mr. Briggs is not here. I think you all can move on. Thank you.
All right. Your objection's noted for that. Let's get to the next one, and this was about notices that Ms. McCune has not received, or not received timely, or what?
There's a number of notices that she did not receive timely, and most recently is the December 1st notices, the notices that are posted on the website, but not mailed. And that was a 44-page document that pretty much was the rebuttal document to the submittals. And there was a limited amount of time to respond to that. And by the time she received it, there was that response time was over. And then again, on the documents that were objected to were posted, were not mailed out. And finally, they did mail it out. I sent complaints about that, and they did finally mail it out. I believe they mailed it it's postmarked the 12th, and that's the day that they had to respond by. And so they missed that deadline. So,
and you're referring to the prosecution team's objection to the CSD's documents?
Well, we were assuming that they were all the documents. We didn't know that they had lost the disk. So we were assuming that we needed
to
look at that.
Is your
But the CSD's documents are also documents that the designated parties have, from the very beginning, have said they would be relying on rather than submitting their own complete sets. And so we consolidated all the documents to make that easier for not just the designated parties, but also for the prosecution, to have all the documents in one place, and then the designated parties could then go through and pick the documents that were most relevant to their testimony.
Okay. Well, is Ms. McCune or you ready to tell us about the documents that we have ruled inadmissible at this point? I'll give you an opportunity to tell us why those documents are relevant and important.
Well, when you look at the number of documents that are there and the number I don't think that there was time to really look and see if that was. We did note that one document we wanted to use is still there among the hundreds that have been tossed. So, that's good news. But
my sense is about this that if you're going to put on a case or defend a case and you're going to rely on documents, that you're really going to know which ones you want. You know, you've identified them, and you know that you're going to be ready at any point when you see an objection to that document. Mm-hmm. That you're ready to step forward and say, wait a minute, I want it in. This is why it's important.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of documents, but those were created by the CSD and some of the designated parties.
Mm-hmm.
They've created that. Mm-hmm. They've created the burden for themselves instead of maybe paring it down to what they really intend to use and go forward with.
Maybe Ms. McPherson can identify the documents that her client would like to comment on that were objected to.
Yeah, there are some documents that.
Specific documents that we're talking about that your client is going to be relying on for her case.
Well. Okay.
Well, that were objected to.
That were objected to.
Sure. That's what we're talking
about. I mean, one way to deal with it is just to wait and see.
Okay.
During your presentation of her CDO, and you can tell us we want to use this document.
Okay.
We'll deal with it at that point.
Okay. That's
okay.
Fine.
Now, you made a comment about not having an adequate time to properly prepare.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think there's the notice that was dated October 16th revised notice of public hearing addresses this, and it set up a protocol whereby this is the document, this is the notice that set up the protocol whereby the designated party's responses to the prosecution's case were to be filed by November 15th. The prosecution was required to file any rebuttal, including any evidence included in its rebuttal, by Friday, December 1st. Designated parties were entitled to submit written responses to the comments filed by the interested persons on November 15th by December 1st. And that is all. There's no provision in that notice for designated parties to respond to the rebuttal prepared by the prosecution team. Okay. And in fact, that's a fairly common practice. The prosecution team presents its case, the respondents respond, and the prosecution team provides rebuttal, and that sets up the issues that are going to be addressed in the hearing. And that is the protocol that was established in the notice dated October 16th, and that is the protocol that we have followed.
Well, then allowing the designated parties to bring up any document issues they have when they're putting on their cases would be appropriate.
That would be the appropriate time to address the document. The admissibility of documents is when they put on their cases. The fact that various people have not received the various exchanges of documents that have happened subsequent to these dates
doesn't violate the protocol
that was established.
Okay. One last thing,
Mr. Chairman, if I may. While it doesn't violate the protocol, the fact that if I understand the situation correctly, and forgive me if I don't, but the fact that the rebuttal argument by Mr. Sato was mailed on December 12th, meaning that the soonest it could be received by the individual designated parties, those without access to the computer would have been the 13th, would have left them with only one day to prepare their verbal responses to that rebuttal for presentation today. I tend to have a problem with unrepresented parties without access to computer having only one day to prepare those verbal rebuttals, but obviously ultimately the decision is yours.
Well, and I can appreciate that. I'm not insensitive, you know, to that fact, so that's why I would allow them to go ahead while they do their individual cases, even if we had ruled something to be inadmissible. I'll hear the argument about it. We can kind of decide whether it should come in or not. We'll give Mr. Sato a chance to respond to that, and we'll kind of deal with it at that point. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right. And then you mentioned, Ms. McPherson, that your that Ms. McCune did not have adequate time to properly prepare. Was that to properly prepare after getting kind of the late receipt of the rebuttal of what documents were going to be objected to, or just in general?
Well, I would say that the way the continuance of the hearing from the 28th of April proceeded,
right,
there was an exchange of five questions and how to proceed, and then that went back and forth, and there was some thought that by hopeful as it might have been, that you might have decided to proceed by, or the prosecution, by dismissing the whole thing and starting over. And starting over might have meant picking new defendants or changing the whole process. And so actually for the party, it started at September 8th. So September 8th is where it started, and then the opportunity to depose witnesses and to organize for this made it very difficult to prepare a case.
Well, as I recall, in May or June, or I think when we had our mm-hmm. status conference, the mm-hmm. first meeting after April, is when the board had said that we're going to keep the same 45 people, or staff had said they're going to keep the same 45 people,
mm-hmm.
and that their submissions, even for the April 28th hearing, would still be admissible
mm-hmm.
and usable. So I think it was quite clear who the people were. There was no intent at all or effort to try to change the defendants in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once September 1st came around, if that's the date that you want to use, there was September, October, November, December. I don't know when did Mr. Briggs leave, but there was time beginning in September for people to collectively decide, you know, we're going to prepare and take Mr. Briggs' deposition. So there's always going to be somebody that feels that they need more time, and I think that the issues in these matters are pretty straightforward, even though there's a tendency to try to make them appear to be more complex and complicated. Can you tell me what more time would be needed to adequately prepare? What would really need to be done?
Well, there were a few things that were a disconnect and could have been done differently. Mr. Sato himself said in his last correspondence that if there had been more time and the designated parties could have been able to work together and even be notified, that they could have reached a settlement. The same thing's true for some of the information that came out about getting testimony and putting together a case. The more time, I think, had to do with the disconnect that my party had in seeing what was going on and working together. There was it was very difficult, and so I think that her complaint is probably goes more to the inability to access the procedures and the system and work her way through that, short of hiring an attorney. And these proceedings have always been said to be kind of straightforward, not so complicated, but I can tell you, for individuals, this is not the right method to go about dealing with this kind of an enforcement action, because they're not equipped to deal with the legal. I'm not equipped to do that, and I do better than some of the others. And it just is. It's very confusing. There are people. This person has a pile of papers in her house and had no clue what they meant, and so it was very difficult.
Well, okay, your objection is noted.
Okay,
and we're going to move on. And unfortunately, some people may never have enough time to adequately prepare under certain circumstances. But we've got to move forward. I think there have been so many months that have passed since people were aware of what was happening and what they needed to do, that there is a requirement and an obligation on their behalf to step up and get assistance, you know, coordinate, or maybe collectively hire a lawyer to help them. So, all right. We're going to move on now to the item number. Yes, okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Martin.
I believe that we're discussing procedural process at this particular time. Is that correct? My name is Alan Martin.
Okay.
The chairman knew, as I presumed everybody else did, too. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I would like to corroborate Mrs. McPherson's testimony regarding the issuance of data, you know, from the Water Quality Control Panel, you know, the board.
Okay.
And I have here as evidence a copy of the order refuting, you know, that is dated December 11th. So if you need prima facie evidence of what she is testifying to, it's right here for all the board members to see. I received it December the 12th. So I get 50 pages, you know, to respond to one day, you know, before I'm to appear before you. Now, if you think that that's adequate time, or that we need more time, we definitely do need more time, Mr. Chairman. We cannot mount a defense to all this data here you know, within a 24-hour period. It's not right, it's not legal, it's not fair, it's not constitutional. And when I look at all these documents, which, you know, require a Philadelphia lawyer, you know, to try and interpret and read, you know, your objections to all the data, and I would like to pass this on to the to the chairman of the member so that they could see the date on that
I've already ruled on that. Your objection is noted that you're joining in Ms. McPherson's objection. If you want to submit that to us when you have your individual hearing time slot, why don't you do it at that time?
Very good, Mr. Chairman. I also would like to say that I do object to the hearings. I object to the process. I object to the procedure. I object to Mr. Sato's disingenuous proposal. I object to the fact that the so-called deposition that she took was not an official deposition, and he knows it. It was a voluntary deposition. We were advised by counsel that Mr. Briggs did not have all the data that we had requested. So in essence, there was no basis, you know, for that deposition. And he knows full well, you know, that that is a fact. I have seen the video. I don't have a copy of the transcript. But I can tell you that it was a very disingenuous approach that in testimony that he's giving you the board. And I disagree with it wholeheartedly. And I will present my defense. I am not in favor of his agreement, which was orchestrated wrongly, and it's not going to benefit the community. Don't bring that up in my defense when the time comes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your comments. Yes.
Hi.
And you are?
1034.
1034?
Yes.
Okay.
And I would like to also join Ms. McPherson's objections. Okay. And I'd also like to add in that to that the prosecution evidence was not presented online until the day of the deposition. Okay. And we were told that we would be able to have this deposition. He would be leaving by mid-October, and instead he left on the 6th. So there really wasn't a chance. Also, Mr. Scheib was notified. We weren't notified, but Mr. Scheib was. And he was busy that evening. He had to get up in front of the community, and he had other responsibilities. He was not able to get to all of us and let us know about that deposition. So obviously, we didn't know about it. We didn't have the evidence. There was no way we could prepare for it, and we weren't notified. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I just mention one thing about this deposition? You know, Mr. Briggs did produce all of the documents that were requested by Mr. Scheib at that deposition, and they were exactly the same documents that in the ill-considered attempt by some of the others to also take a deposition, the exact same documents that were requested. Those documents were produced. No one introduced them. No one used them at the deposition. Well, I could say a couple, but I mean, the vast majority of the documents, they were there, and people could have utilized them if they had chosen to. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, yes. I have a question and a request. The question is for clarification as to the order of proceedings.
Okay.
With regard to closing arguments, I am unclear as to whether those will be heard at the tail end of this entire proceeding or at the end of each individual proposed cease and desist order proceeding.
Well, let's go ahead and discuss this, because it's something that we have been discussing, the board have been discussing earlier in terms of how to, you know, manage this.
Sure.
And the way the notice is laid out would have closing arguments after the conclusion of each individual CDO hearing.
That was my understanding.
And that's what's in here. We had put kind of a an advisory in the beginning, the note. It said the water board chairman may adjust the timing and order of these proceedings during the hearing. So, I mean, there's a, some of us may feel that maybe your client should give its closing argument at the end of the prosecution team's case, and not provide a closing after each individual.
After each individual, correct.
Right.
Or for that matter, looking at it the other way, each individual should give their closing argument after their hearing and not after all of the hearing. Someone who starts today shouldn't come back tomorrow at potentially 8, 9 p.m. to give a close. That was more my fear.
Well, that's correct.
Okay.
You know, people would only have to do it, you know, one time.
And you certainly don't want to hear from me after each and every hearing.
Well, that's the way we wrote it. But I would prefer that you give your closing after the prosecution team is done with its case in chief.
So then I'll give a case in chief and include the closing as a portion of that.
Well, I think after the cross-examination or, you know, rebuttal takes place, okay, then you would do it
sure. That
way. Is that okay, Mr. Santo, with you?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Thank you. And then my request, Ms. McPherson asked that I seek leave to introduce pleadings in the writ case that was concluded yesterday. These, I believe, Ms. McPherson, will be relied on by your client and by other designated parties. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What documents are these?
Can you explain, just let them know which pleadings you'd like to introduce?
Well,
I know what's all.
Can you do that? Can you just do that?
And if you have a set, you should give it to Mr. Santo, so while we were discussing this, he has something to comment on in front of him.
The petition for writ of mandate, okay, the response by the water board, ex parte application for issuance of the alternative writ of mandate, and the points and authorities therein. I believe, if I understand correctly, that the purpose of this is to set forth certain legal arguments that were made before the court and on which some of the individual designated parties would be relying in their presentations to you today, that it would be beneficial to them to have those legal arguments spelled out in written form, and then they would be able to more quickly summarize them for you in their spoken comments.
Well, the deadline for submission of written comments has passed.
I understand
that. People are going to have time to go ahead and comment and tell us what they want during, you know, the 15 minutes that they're going to have. That these are official court documents. For purposes of an appeal or later, anybody can ask a reviewing body, I think, to take judicial notice of them. Am I mistaken?
No, that's correct. These are documents that can be judicially noticed at any time.
I mean, with the State Board, you can ask if they can be included, you know, in the record. Well, let me hear from Mr. Santo.
You know, it's certainly irregular to have pleadings introduced as evidence. I mean, they can talk about the same issues that they would like, but I mean, you know, why introduce all of the pleadings from this particular writ proceeding into this matter? I mean, you guys aren't reviewing the decision of the Superior Court, certainly, and so the, you know, relevance of these documents is pretty much zero. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Not going to come in.
Thank you for consideration.
In another case, and so they're essentially allegations. And if there's legal arguments there that people want to rely upon they're going to have to orally give them to us during their presentations.
Okay.
Okay.
I would point out also that the time for the designated parties to submit their response to the prosecution's case was November 15th.
Okay. I believe we are ready for item number three, right?
Can I ask one other question?
And that would be
non-evidentiary
comments by government agencies. And I don't think I have any speaker cards for that. Are there?
Excuse me.
Or there wouldn't be. Are they? Yes.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I was trying to get your attention.
Yes.
I have one other question procedurally, just to make it a little clearer
for
me. The reliance on testimony by other parties, in order to not duplicate the same thing over and over, we've been trying to kind of focus in on designated parties maybe covering certain areas, and in doing so, they are expecting to rely on one another's testimony. We're expecting to rely on others' testimony. And in some cases, on the 15th, when we put in our testimony, in our written testimony anyway, we were looking at people who subsequently have settled to have made that part of our case, which we would have incorporated by reference. And that makes it very difficult now. And also, if we have a case that's heard and then, are you ruling at the conclusion of each case? Because then how do we incorporate by reference the testimony of others that come after us? I hope that was clear.
There would be no objection to, or there should be no objection to, any designated party incorporating by reference into his or her presentation the written documentation that has been provided to the board already, and that is posted on the website, that is before the board, that board members have copies of. If the person you're representing wants to incorporate by reference into her proceeding the testimony that has been presented in writing, or the argument that has been presented in writing by any other designated party, she may do so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the second part of your question related to...
had to do with whether you're going to rule on the CDO after each hearing, individual hearing, and how would you incorporate a testimony that would come after in that case so that you could make that ruling with that knowledge?
You are entitled to, the parties are entitled to incorporate by reference the documentation, and certainly they would be entitled to rely on any testimony that was offered before they appeared. If they want to, if they want to rely on the oral testimony of people who would have come after them, they are going to have to call those people.
So they would
as witnesses,
yeah. And that would go for any designated party that perhaps settled, that had researched an area that we were depending upon them to.
You have to call them as a witness
okay.
if you want their oral testimony, oral evidence to come in. I don't know
okay.
how else you would do it.
If their research and conclusions have been presented to the board in written documents, as has been the hope of the board in setting up this protocol, then you will have no trouble in bringing that evidence into your cases. However, if you're hoping to rely on oral testimony, then you're going to have to put it on.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Thomas, we are these witnesses? Or do they have speaker cards?
No.
Mr. Thompson, number three?
These would be people that
government agencies?
I'm in the cards, but I don't have any cards from government agencies.
Okay. Do we have any other governmental agency witnesses that wish to testify before the board on this matter? Okay.
No interested persons.
Now we'll go to interested persons.
Yeah.
that wish to testify. Mr. Dugan, have your card, and I think I have some others here.
But he can still speak as an interested party.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
In theory, he has a minute to speak for himself.
Yeah.
I did hear my name,
yeah,
right?
This is a minute to speak on behalf of yourself, not on Ms. Coleman, who you're going to deal with.
Correct.
Deal with her later. Okay.
And Dave Dugan. My name is Dave Dugan, Los Osos.
Okay. Before you start, let me just make sure I have these names properly identified. And I guess Lawson Schaller, this is another interested person. Okay. Ann Normant. Oh, okay. This says public. Keith Weimer, this says public comment. I don't know if this means interested persons or this afternoon public comment. So because it said public comment, I'm going to put it aside. Mr. Payne is not here right now. Let's see here. Public comment, a new county project. Okay. All right. Number 1029. Wait, 1029. Okay. Yeah, you can speak at, because you have settled. Agreement CDO number 3. Okay, Keith Weimer does have this down here. And Ann Calhoun is on this list. Ms. Taylor, is this as an interested person?
Public comment.
Public comment, okay. And then Eric Greening, non-agenda comment on measure. Okay, so that would be this afternoon. And more.
Interested persons.
Interested persons. Okay. We have three more. Okay. Mr. Dugan.
My name is David Dugan, Los Osos. As an interest party, in the previous hearings, I submitted, I believe, 18 pages of documentation, of which, of course, the prosecution dismissed as having no merit. Then having the Air Quality Control Board come in and basically stop the idea of pumping every 2 months because of health concerns for air pollution, I believe that gave my documentation merit because that was part of my argument. Also, too, there was a section in there at the end in my summary that this really amounted to a septic system maintenance program of pump, inspect, repair, or replace if necessary. Again, this settlement gave my argument as an interested party merit. Of course, as that paperwork has been unceremoniously dumped, I believe, and it no longer exists, I guess, as a testimony. But I would like to say that when I do say something up here, I do consider it having merit. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. 1029.
Before I begin, if I may clarify the difference for myself between this comment and the public comment to come later, if you could clarify for me.
The public comment period that we have to have with every meeting that the board has, we invite the public to comment on matters not on the agenda.
And
that's what that public comment is for.
So, and this slot now?
This is related. People from the public can comment specifically on what's before us. The proposed cease and desist orders.
Okay. Mine would be for the non-agenda slot.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll move it to this afternoon then. Okay. Keith Weimer. Okay. Mr. Weimer. He's outside. Okay. I'll put his card on the bottom. We'll bring him up. Ann Calhoun.
Ann Calhoun, Los Osos. I had filled out a card to speak on agenda item number 3, which was the proposed settlement, and that's been voted on.
Okay.
Pointless to comment.
All right. Okay, Ms. McPherson. Mr. Weimer, we'll get to you next, right after Ms. McPherson. Okay.
Gail McPherson, Los Osos. I was involved, I've been involved with the CDO since the beginning, when a neighbor came and said, what in the heck is this thing? And I just wanted to note that they think the designated parties in this first round of prosecution, because they are a test case, have some of their rights to a fair hearing denied, because they are the first, and this is an experiment. This does streamline the process when you get to a settlement. I was hoping that we would get to a settlement that would be adequate, that would work, and then could be something that the entire community could embrace as a work plan in a cooperative manner where they could work together, and it might be something that could eventually signal kumbaya. I don't think that that is an impossible goal, and I hope that through these hearings that we get closer to that end. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Weimer.
Thank you. First, I wanted to correct possibly a misperception. As I was leaving the lectern just a little while ago, you quipped just a little bit about, you know, how long have you lived in Los Osos, referring to some of the dissension and controversy. And I responded back automatically. But I wanted to, just for the record, let you know that I believe we've really been maligned in many ways, and that there is a whole group of us that are not, you know, tending to get into controversy, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to get a settlement agreement that everybody could live with. And I just wanted to have everybody on your board think for a minute what it would be like if you found yourself in this situation. And you realize there were people on both sides that were very committed, but just imagine at this point that you're faced with an order, and that order could amount, given certain unfortunate set of circumstances, to $5,000 a day. And imagine that then you're being asked to get into a process where you're expected to give input and so on to a county process to get the sewer done, and hanging over your head are these incredible fines and all of this onus on your property. So there is a whole group of us out there in the middle that want to get the job done, but we'd like to do it in a way that where it is a very cooperative and mutual way. And we are very willing to work with your board and work with the prosecution team to get it done.
Well, we appreciate your comments. Thank you. Lawson Schaller, then Ann Norment, and then Mr. Scheib.
Lawson Schaller, Los Osos, Mr. Board, Mr. Chair, Board, staff, and citizens. I want to just encourage a more thought-out resolution, work plan, what have you, that most of the community would accept. A fractured, divided, confusing approach has been non-productive. We need efforts to include and consider the entire community, not just a small fraction of people. Please consider and create pragmatic steps, simple, clear, pragmatic steps that the citizens can follow to avoid CDOs, the confusion, the frustrating aspects for you, I'm sure, as well as us, of the hearings and all these proceedings. I think a list mailed out, as was suggested in a letter, of mailed out certified mail that says, here's what you got to do, real simple steps. I think you'd find most of the community would follow it. Those that don't then need to face CDOs and other issues. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Ms. Norment?
Ann Norment, Los Osos. You know, we understand that the Water Board wants clean water, and so do the citizens of Los Osos. However, prosecuting individual citizens for events that they really don't have control over isn't going to get clean water in Los Osos. You know, in order to further that end, accountability for fixing things needs to be aligned with the power to do it. citizens can realistically get their tanks pumped, they can get them inspected, they can participate in public comment and really think very deeply about the 218 vote that that's before them is a good one and participate in that process. But beyond that, they don't have a lot of control. You know, I doubt you, this board together, could come up with a sewer treatment plan on their own. So I'd really favor language in the settlement or the CDOs that adjusts the January 1st, 2008 deadline, and also tighten up language about what constitutes the AB 2701 process, as well as material cessations, issues like ancient artifacts, problems holding up the process, California Coastal Commission evaluation, other government agencies that really are up beyond the control of the citizens. If you ally the power, you know, with accountability, then it's going to move forward. Otherwise, it's just punitive.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Scheib.
Rob Scheib. Mr. Jeffries, you're right. Nobody does have a right to discharge in violation of a discharge prohibition. However, your agency under the 1978 MOU with the County of San Luis Obispo has responsibilities of notification to the County of San Luis Obispo, and there has been evidence submitted that your staff has failed on those responsibilities. And I just want you to remember that as you go forward and discuss these issues. I've worked very hard over this last year to help unify this board in my community. I believe we're getting closer. I believe we're getting closer to Mr. Shallcross's kumbaya moment. And I encourage you all through this process to keep that in mind and to continue that process, because I believe we can get there. Thank you very much.
Okay. I guess Mr. Shallcross is never going to forget that moment when it comes. It was a joke. Okay. Yes. Yeah, let me get... I'll pull your card. I'll put you at the bottom of the list. Okay.
And I would also like a minute at the other public comment as well.
Another card.
Yeah, that you could... Yeah, there's no problem with that. Okay. James Tach. And then Richard Marketson, and then 1029.
Good morning. I want
your name,
James Tkach, Los Osos. I want to let you know I object to this process. Holding individual citizens accountable for the failure of their government is not a way to proceed. As one speaker said, I ask you to imagine yourselves in this position. As a member of the Wastewater Committee, we're actively involved in pursuing a project as best we can, even though the county's taken over. We've reviewed an interim septic management pumping program that we would try to get incorporated into the community. That was something that you guys asked the county to do a long time ago. This CSD board and the community is willing to get it done. It would accomplish a lot of the goals of what you want accomplished by the CDOs. The CDOs are punitive in nature. I see it no other way, and I'd ask you to try and convince me otherwise. We do want a sewer. You know the story. We just didn't want it in the middle of our town. We are proceeding towards those ends, and I ask you not to issue any CDOs. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Marketson.
Richard Margetson. The first thing I want to talk about is, as you proceed to the next phase, if you're going to incorporate the requirement for the owners to notify the next occupant of the property, I don't think you have the documentation in place, and I don't think that California Association of Realtors has developed a form to make that notification mandatory. And I think you're going to have problems down the road for those people that don't do the noticing. I have a problem with the 30 days after the close of escrow notice. And there was a question brought up earlier about going after people after the fact. What about people who move out of the state of California? What mechanism are you going to have to possibly find them? The 3-year pumping requirement, subsequent pumping requirement after the initial pumping. I thought you heard testimony at the last hearing from Dr. Wickham, and I'd like to know how that became the standard, the 3-year standard. And then my last comment is, all the money that's been spent on these hearings on both the staff level, the CSD level, and paying for you to be here over the last few years, we could have had a septic management program in place already, and we could have had a toilet retrofit and a showerhead retrofit program in place in Los Osos, and I think that would have gone up a lot further to correcting our water problems than what we have now by sitting here at these meetings twice a year, year after year. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And last speaker is number 1029.
Mr. Young, board yes. staff, 1029, now an interested party. I just wanted to make two brief comments regarding the settlement agreement and the hearings this board will have over the next day and a half. I would like to request board direction back to staff, regardless of your decisions on to issue or not issue CDOs, that we may continue with staff to reach a better settlement agreement that will reach out to the community and not just people possibly accepting it for other than the pure merit of the agreement itself, a better agreement that alleviates two main fears that are still in the settlement, one being a possible unreachable goal of 2008 due to election certification dates after the 218 vote, and the other to have an agreement instead of an order that we're fearful may be changed unilaterally by the board. Thank you.
Okay, so what was the last point? Something to not
change,
be or to be changed unilaterally by the board?
There is a fear that a settlement order may be changed unilaterally, I'm sorry, by staff, not the board, I misspoke. There's a fear that an order could be changed once it is signed, whereas a settlement agreement would have to be renegotiated.
Well,
unless that's a misconception, there's a fear among
Richards,
people that did not want
Richards
to settle.
We'll have Mr. Richards address that for you.
Thank you.
He's concerned, amongst other things,
is
that
since this is an order, it could be changed by the executive officer under the authority.
It was on.
I can't imagine the executive officer being able to change the settlement agreement without the consent of the board, because this is a. The order in this case is based on a negotiated settlement that has been endorsed by the board. And while the settlement agreement is going to be enforceable as an order under Section 13304, the executive officer would not be able to adjust the terms of that now that it has been adopted by the board without presenting it back to the board again. And certainly the that kind of unilateral adjustment would invalidate the agreement of the
right, of the parties,
of the parties
right.
who have agreed, have consented to the imposition of these obligations.
I wouldn't expect that we're going to see that happen at all. As far as your other concerns are, a cease and desist order is proposed by staff. Only the board can issue it. Only the board can change it. The board has control over that. So, and the board can revisit a CDO in the future. Members of the public can write letters or can come to the public comment portion of a board meeting and address this if they got some issues with the CDOs or they want to see changes done. That's not impossible to do if the circumstances warranted it. It's got to go through staff to do. And so if down this line, and I would anticipate actually, I mean, people comment that we've targeted 45 and what's going to happen to the rest. I anticipate that the prosecution team is probably going to address that issue after we're done today and tomorrow, where everyone is going to be treated perhaps in a couple or one big chunk. And everyone's going to be on the same footing, and things will speed up and be processed. And if there is a more favorable settlement agreement that takes place later, we heard Mr. Sato say the people that settled earlier would get the benefit of that.
I appreciate that, and I do believe that. The concern is once many settle today or by tomorrow, this may be the final agreement, and there's several that don't think the agreement has gone far enough to be even handed. And the fear is the staff may say, this is the agreement. It's the only one we're going to entertain now. Well, and they may stop negotiating. But, and I guess I'm requesting board.
Yeah, here's the problem with that. You have to settle with them, not with us. We're just reviewing the settlement, so you've got to be able to, you have to deal with the prosecution team on that.
I guess I'm asking the board to perhaps ask them to keep an open mind, and that's all.
Okay, well, I think that they've heard your concerns. I don't know how I would enforce that direction.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, yes.
Mr. Chairman, it's been brought to my attention that there may be some misunderstanding about the settlement process.
Okay.
And that people may be able to negotiate settlement after the issuance of cease and desist orders against them. And I would point out that would not be possible. A settlement is only possible before the CDO is issued, before any enforcement action is taken. It's inherently a compromise that is achieved between the prosecution and the respondent to avoid going through the hearing process in which the adjudication will take place. Once the adjudication takes place, and a cease and desist order is issued, if in fact that is the outcome, then it is too late to attempt to negotiate more favorable settlement terms.
Right. Yeah, my comment was only that because the board issues the cease and desist orders, I mean, it's not impossible for the board to revisit a cease and desist order in the future if the circumstances
warrant it. That is certainly true. The board retains the jurisdiction to amend cease and desist orders as it retains the jurisdiction to amend cleanup and abatement orders and waste discharge requirements as the circumstances warrant. So the board does retain control over this, and the board also would retain control over any proposed enforcement of either the cease and desist order or the settlement agreements.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, may I add my understanding of that language? And just to clarify, I believe it's the settlement agreement's being misinterpreted to some extent. What I'm trying to say is that Mr. Durgerbien does have a very good and legitimate concern about that language. We mentioned the January 1st, 2008 date. If for some reason there's a hiccup and that doesn't, there isn't a vote that's approved and certified by that time, then it actually falls to the prosecution team the executive officer, then to at his discretion grant a further extension of that date. And it's a very discretionary type of language. I think people are very, very concerned about that, and that's why we were so concerned about the date and wanted to actually build in, as another person indicated from the community, more benchmarks so that the process is understood and that people don't have to go to a CAO. The other thing about the CAO, I understand, is that the staff and prosecution team have a lot more discretion over about how that's enforced, and there, because it's a CAO rather than a CDO, then there is quite a bit more discretionary enforcement action there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have a...
Yeah. As far as the language in the settlement agreement, you have to talk to them about that. If you want to come up with something that you think is more favorable, more defined, better for this reason, that's not going to happen today. We've already reached that agreement.
Mm-hmm.
It's been passed. So you have to talk to them later, and that would really apply to people coming in after today and tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Dr. Press.
Could I, again, by way of clarifying the settlement language, under A2, in the event that the benefits assessment is not approved by the county before January 1st, 2008, the discharger shall cease all discharges no later than January 1st, 2011. My understanding of the settlement agreement was that January 1st, 2008 might come, there might not be a benefits assessment, and then the clock starts. But what if January 1st, 2008 comes and there is a vote, a 218 vote, scheduled for March 2008? My read of the language is that the board, there's that 3-year window in which progress towards a treatment facility can be demonstrated, for example, by a benefits assessment happening in March and then subsequent steps. And at that point, the neither the board nor the executive officer is mandated by the agreement to start to issuing penalties or against settlement parties that settled, right? I mean, in other words, people are getting concerned that the January 1st, 2008 deadline won't be met, even though some short months after that there might be some kind of, there might be a 218 vote. And my read of the language is that if it's clear that there is going to be a vote, it doesn't vitiate the time span allowed by the, so could John, could you speak to this? Could you clarify if I've understood it correctly?
You're saying that there's no mandatory enforcement provision in the event that if they don't approve an assessment.
Right. I'm trying to imagine a scenario in which January 1st arrives,
and
it's on the March ballot.
Right.
Not on a December.
At that point in time, they would still have to cease discharging within 3 years. However, the settlement agreement does provide for the possibility to extend times if circumstances would warrant it. In other words, if perhaps instead of by January, by March, they would have the assessment district and be making the requisite progress and be able to you know, if not catch up, at least approach progress. At that point, the executive officer could extend the times.
You know what? We'll put that off because that's something that may and may not happen. And we have an agreement that's been agreed to. We've passed on it. I mean, I could envision different scenarios here, and I don't know that we can address all of them. And it's their agreement. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens, and at that point react to it. Okay, Joe Sparks and then Keith Swanson, the last two speakers. And if anyone else wishes to address the board for a minute who is not a designated party, now's the time to do it. Go ahead.
Chairman Young and the board, I'm Joe Sparks. I am a director of the Los Osos Community Services District, but speaking as a private citizen today. I do want to share some concerns I have, specifically regarding that I don't believe we have a clear mechanism still for these individuals to comply with the discharge prohibition. As we know, this saga is replete with agency decisions that have prevented compliance from these homeowners for complying with the prohibition discharge, going back to Coastal's decision almost a decade ago not to issue a CD permit. And understanding that there is a significant change in the law, AB 2701, that occurred subsequent to these enforcement hearings beginning, going back to last year. This week, the county administrator, David Edge, even stated that the county's was not fully committed to do a project in the sense that they had some discretion and no obligation. They have committed the funds, and they are going proceeding towards a 218 vote. But without clear authority and obligation for any lead agency to complete a project, there is that possibility out there that these homeowners still are signing settlement agreements, you're issuing CDOs, where they have no real means to potentially hook up to a wastewater treatment system. And I'd hope that this agency, both the board and through the staff, can communicate that to the legislature, that concern to the legislature and the county, that there does need to have this commitment and obligation by an agency that we get a project completed. And I very much want to see a project completed in an expeditious manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Swanson. And last speaker is Eric Greening.
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. I just find this whole process is a waste of time for our community. It seemed to me it was almost trying to influence a vote, which it did not. Two of the directors were reelected. The CDO recipients have no control over the building of a wastewater project. You can see by the progress being made with the county, AB 2701, that they're working towards resolving this issue. The people that were issued this have, some of these people may not have even voted or may have voted against stopping the project, but they had no control over that. And I just don't understand the logic here and what you're trying to accomplish. I think everybody in Los Osos wants a wastewater project. They just want one that they can afford. And I think going through the process that you're going through now, I think you're setting a precedence that you're going to have to oblige every subsequent CDO recipient the same process instead of just doing a blanket CDO to 40,000, whatever, 4,000 people. And my final comment is this board and staff has prevented public comment at two previous meetings of this board, which is against a violation of the Brown Act and freedom of speech.
Which meetings you're referring to? Up in Monterey?
Monterey.
Okay, let me just say something about that. Because I was the chair at that meeting. It was my decision not to allow it. When we have a pending enforcement action, in order for any person to address the board and give them information about a pending enforcement action, it's only fair that all designated parties are present to hear that.
No,
they were not all present. I made the decision that the designated party's rights to hear influence on the board, information given to the board, trumped people's individual rights, if you want to call it, or privilege to come and speak to the board at public comment.
Now, see, I disagree because it was an item that was not on the agenda. They had a right to speak about it.
Thank you for your comments and your opinion. Okay, Mr. Greening.
Eric Greening, and I share the concern of Ann Calhoun that you've actually taken action on the contents of the settlement agreement before opening it to public comment. As I read what you have approved, it appears that for those who sign, those who settle, the ultimate hammer does not go away. It still is there if things don't go right. To the ceiling of $5,000 a day. You have removed the floor of $500 a day at your discretion, but the ceiling is still there, the hammer is still there, and what I'm also hearing is that it's at your discretion to decide as of January 1st, 2008, whether circumstances are or are not within the control of the CDO recipients. And I'm wondering what due process rights they forfeit under those circumstances as a result of signing. It seems that signing does forfeit due process rights with the hammer still in place, but I just want some clarification. Thank you.
Okay. That is my last card.
Mr. Young, I would like to clarify something.
Okay.
Gwen Taylor, I was denied last Friday the right under public comment to speak on an item that was not on the agenda. So I, too, was denied my right to speak as a public comment. Thank you.
Last Friday?
Yes.
Are you talking about the December 1st board meeting?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That was 2 weeks ago. All right. Okay, that's it. No more interested persons to speak. I think we ought to just go ahead and break for lunch, right? And we'll come back at 2, and then we will begin, I believe, with the prosecution's case.
Mr. Chairman, I think you have general open public comment at 2.
We'll go ahead and take that before. Thank you. Right. We'll have general public comment before the prosecution team puts on its case.